Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 19.
Welcome to the 19th episode of the Secret Origins Podcast. We have been going unlimited for a while. I am your host, Adrian Mike, and joining me is Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Where the hell have you been?
Broken computer, car accidents. My life is one big soap opera, dude.
Are you all right?
I'm fine. I pissed off at education and...
Well, you said car accident, so I figured, uh-oh.
No, not me. The other half, car accident off the road.
Is it okay?
Yeah, car's now repaired, but one of those, hey, come get me. What happened? Well, there was snow and a deer and, yeah. Okay. So unfortunately, things have jumped up in life recently, and every time I try to record this.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, stuff happens and that's fine. I mean, I've said this every time that we've had a lapse in episode that, you know.
Which is always my fault.
Well, I'm not blaming
you. Except for that one
time. I'm not blaming you, but, you know, I said that, you know, if life happens, then this can be put on hold. We'll finish it eventually. So, I mean, you know, it's not like it's going anywhere. And I've just been doing the usual podcasting, everything else. We are coming up in June of 2011. Will be the two-year online anniversary of Geekcast Radio Network. We've got a bunch of new podcasts coming up. We've got just a whole crap ton of stuff going on.
So all the staff get, like, their own free genetically trained flying monkeys, right?
No.
I mean, since it's a two-year anniversary, we've got to bump up what we got for the first year.
No.
Oh, come on. Flying monkeys, dude. It's almost as good as, like, undead mummies.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. Lincoln Logs outrank Legos any day.
I think you just killed away any...
I'm sorry, but seriously, when I was 4, 5, and 6 years old, I would... have more fun building stuff and actually building stuff that looked like the actual thing with Lincoln Logs than I ever did with Legos. Legos are these... They show off these just immaculate displays of helicopters and boats and this, that, and the other thing. When I got Legos as a kid, I was like, how the hell am I supposed to make that? There's no way I can do that. I'm sorry. I do like Legos, but I'm sorry. Lincoln Logs are better.
When I was a kid, I was a spoiled little child, but I actually had enough Legos that I made a full 2-scale mask, like TV show mask.
Oh my God.
Yeah, my parents weren't too thrilled when I super glued it together and was running through the house with it.
That's funny. So yeah, a couple of things I wanted to bring up was, the fact that...
This episode was brought to you by the Guy Gardner Fan Club.
No.
It only takes one punch.
No. I'm sorry. If he didn't appear in the cartoon, he does not matter. Guy Gardner fans aside, whatever, in other mediums, if he did not appear in Justice League...
Dude, I've got to mention him at least once per episode.
I know, but what I'm saying is, if he didn't appear in the cartoon, it doesn't matter. But I did want to... bring up the fact that Mattel has done a lot with their JLU line, and it's pretty much a fan line and whatever the fans want, because let's face it, when they first started doing JLU figures, they weren't, at least in my opinion, they weren't all that great.
I honestly didn't get the early figures, so.
Well, I have some of the early ones, and they look like they look like the characters and everything else. My only real complaint is that they're like 3 3/4 figures, but, and people have heard me say this before, Batman, in order for me to get him to stand up, he has a joint at the knee, so you can bend it, bend the bottom part of his leg where his foot is, but it looks like you fucking broke his foot. And it's just weird. But yes, there have been numerous ones. I actually have the JLU Lobo figure, which was actually done much better. It's much taller. It's about, I think it's about a six inch figure, maybe 6 or 7. He's bigger than all the other ones that we've seen so far. And they've also come out with a 2-pack of the Parademons, so you can army build your Parademons. And they also came out with a 2-pack for Darkseid and Kalibak. Now, the Darkseid is based off of how he appeared in the episode Destroyer, which we will get to eventually once we get to season 5 of Justice League. But yeah, I'm really thrilled with those. I would actually love to get that Darkseid and Kalibak. That would be so cool.
It would be nice to have the whole father-son thing going.
Well,
father, you know, pseudo child.
Yeah, something
beat up
like that.
Boy, Punch and Judy.
Yes. So today we'll be reviewing the final 4 episodes from Justice League season 4. So I think we're gonna get right to the episodes.
Don't you touch him! He's Justice League.
First up, we have Flashpoint. Inside Project Cadmus, Captain Atom attacks Superman. In addition to his super strength, Atom can produce red sun energy blasts that weaken Superman. Huntress takes Question out of the building and calls the Watchtower for an emergency teleport. Captain Atom gives it everything he's got, but he's no match for Superman's strength, and Superman is forced to give him a severe beating, coming dangerously close to cracking his containment suit. He did crack that containment suit. Before Atom finally stays down. But when Cadmus' doctors arrive to see to Atom, Superman tells him to back off. Captain Atom is one of the League. No one tries to interfere with Superman as he carries him out and back to the Watchtower. Superman visits Question in the infirmary, who confesses that he was afraid Superman was coming close to killing Luther. Superman insists that that would be impossible, but Question reminds him that Luther and Cadmus have been remarkably effective in bringing out his worst side. Superman tells Kara the truth about Hamilton. And together they storm up to the bridge, looking to assemble a team to go down and smash Cadmus before they take another move against the League. Jean Jones and Green Arrow remind them exactly why they can't do that, because they are committed to upholding the law, and Cadmus may actually be a legitimate, albright secret branch of the government. Furthermore, such action is precisely why ordinary humans fear the League. Superman is still not convinced. Working in his laboratory at LexCorp, Lex Luthor receives a call from Amanda Waller about the breakout. She warns him that if Question has gotten evidence to implicate Luther, Cadmus will cut him loose. Seemingly unconcerned, Luther strides to a targeting computer in his lab that has been just beeped ready and pressed enter. The debate aboard the Watchtower is interrupted when the computer announces that the binary fusion cannon is preparing to fire. Horrified, Jean tries to override the system, but he's locked out. As a last resort, he tears the circuitry out of the control panel, but the system reroutes. Superman hurtles out of the station and to the mouth of the cannon, but is a split second too late. The laser fires down at the Earth's surface. Down below, people are going about their daily lives, but pause when they see the sky light up. A beam lances down and hits an abandoned building marked condemned. The building is vaporized and a massive shockwave ripples out, hitting the surrounding city with the force of an earthquake. Aboard the watchtower, the discharges drain the station's power for a whole hour. Even without sensors or communications, John can tell that the League has fired on Cadmus' headquarters. Several things happen at once. John receives an angry call from the President of the United States on a special hotline, but swears that the League was not responsible for the blast. At the same time, Flash leads a rescue team down to the surface to help those caught in the shockwave. Meanwhile, the President receives a call from Waller, who reveals that the facility that was destroyed was in fact empty. They evacuated an hour earlier because of the break-in by Superman. Waller advises the President in the strongest terms to order retaliation. In her eyes, the blast was clearly retribution for taking question, and the League and the government are officially at war. The President is reluctant to order retaliation and tells Waller to stand by. The League is at its best on the ground, rescuing people trapped by the devastation, but things turn ugly as rumors start to fly that the League fired the cannon at the ground. At Cadmus's new facility, Waller becomes tired of waiting, convinced that they need to act. She orders Galatea to take command of an army of Ultimen clones. Your thoughts, good sir?
Wow. Can you say, and that's something I need to point out for majority of these final episodes, a lot of them is all action. So while I do have, I do have a good number of notes, but, you know, most of them are quotes and stuff like that. Our first note was, the Superman-Captain Atom fight was way better than the Captain Marvel-Superman fight from a few episodes ago.
I think it's better, but for different reasons. Like, this isn't somebody that's a cookie cutter of Superman. Like, right. Captain Marvel's pretty close to Supes.
Yeah.
It seems like this is not just a conflict of two people with different, that are two sides of the same coin. It's a fight of morality and what loyalty is.
Right, yeah.
Because you've got Captain Atom, who is military, hardcore, you know, Air Force all the way.
Yeah.
And his loyalty isn't just to the League, it's also to the government that he serves and the country that he serves. So it's kind of interesting to see the dichotomy there. And then Superman, who is technically a civilian, and trying to go for something that he deems as working for the betterment. I don't know. It just seems it's an interesting fight.
Yeah, I will agree. But I mean, I just like the Superman Captain Marvel fight from what was that episode? From Clash. While the action in that was epic, I mean, clearly Superman is in the wrong. I mean, clearly he is with wanting to destroy, but, you know, at all the same time, Luthor should have been up front with him, which, of course, we all know Luthor's not going to do. Yeah, it's Lex fucking Luthor. But the thing about the Superman Captain Atom fight was just, it was so much more powerful because of what Captain Atom is. Like he said, I control radiation, and that means red sun radiation. So that's gonna, I mean, technically, he was blasting Superman with straight on kryptonite. I mean, almost like full blast of, you know, red kryptonite or whatever. I mean, it was just one of those things. I don't understand, though. One thing I don't understand about it is, in Superman the Animated Series, or actually, even here in Justice League, the episode Hereafter, when Earth had a red sun now, Superman has no powers. So on Krypton, Superman would just be a normal human, as if, you know, us humans are here on Earth. So my question is, if kryptonite, which is poison to Kryptonians, especially if they're on Earth and exposed to a yellow sun. If that's poison, how is red sun radiation, okay, that's bad. But I'm saying, how is something from the red sun of Krypton going to affect... that's one thing I've never understood
it's
about...
It's supposed to strip him of his powers.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where I just have never understood. I guess it's just another way of them to working in some sort of kryptonite, I guess.
Honestly, I think it's a case of Kevin Adam just not realizing, hey, it's really not going to do that much effect right away.
Yeah.
It's a long-term exposure type deal. So, as opposed to kryptonite, if he had just done normal kryptonite. But I think from a writing perspective, it was like, okay, we're going to give him something else that he's weak against. So he's not just Superman and go.
Right, yeah. And I mean, the other thing is, technically, and it makes me think of the old Max Fleischer cartoon, Superman. The very first episode where he's fighting the mad scientist and he's punching back the laser beam made me think of that, because if you look at it, technically, Superman is fighting pure energy. I mean, Captain Atom even said in Initiation, he's not human. He's living energy is what he is. I mean, so technically Superman is fighting pure energy here.
In a containment suit.
Well, right. No, I know that. But I'm saying, I mean, if he didn't have the containment suit, it would be pure energy.
Yes. But without the containment suit, he couldn't fight against Superman.
Very true.
Have a coherent form.
Very true. When Huntress punches the second guy, yikes, glass shattering. Shattered glass.
I liked Huntress in this episode.
Yeah, I do, like, too.
One of the things I've got down is when she says, dude, Superman just told you to move. It's like, she's like, she knows, like, hey, this is Superman. You don't really get in his way, and then if he tells you to move, you hop too. You should know this, Captain Atom. What are you doing? Do you have a death wish?
Yes, exactly. Questions unmasked.
He's a ginger.
I've always I like the Green Arrow, Black Canary stuff, but even with, especially starting on Double Date, I really like the dynamic that Question and Huntress have. So I like where this went of, you know, him saying, oh, well, you're right, I am the ugliest guy of all time, whatever else. And she's like, not in my eyes. And it was before she even unmasked him. And I really like the dynamic between the two of them.
It does show really good, it shows like they really do have something going on instead of just, you know, flash in the pan, throw the two characters together, throw in a blender, go.
Yep. More Cadmus plot revealed, because they've actually shown that Cadmus is analyzed and found out. Well, because Luther is a part of Cadmus, that they know about the alternate universe adventure with the Justice Lords. So we've got more and more Cadmus stuff being revealed. Do I look like Batman to you? Actually, you kind of do. All scowly
like that. That has to be one of the best lines in this episode.
I know, and I think George Newbern delivered that. George Newbern has grown into Superman. Like Tim Daly from Superman the Animated Series, amazing job as Superman. He's one of my favorite voices of Superman. But I don't know if I've said this before on the show, but I never knew that there was any voice actor change. I thought, when I first saw Justice League and I heard Superman, I thought it was still Tim Daly. Come to find out it was George Newbern. But him and Daly are a tie for me for best animated Superman voice, because to me they sound so similar, and just some of the lines that Newbern was able to pull off was just amazing.
I honestly couldn't tell the difference until you told me it wasn't Tim Daly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I feel stupid.
And then, of course, Lex, that was fast. Still, opportunity knocks. And I was like, what in the hell is he talking about? And then it flashes to the – because Waller's like, what? What did you say? Nothing.
Oh, nothing.
Fine. I got to get back to work here. Later, Mrs. Waller, or whatever he says. And then it shows the screen. Holy shit, he took over the binary fusion cannon.
Who saw that coming?
Who didn't see that coming?
Yeah. Apparently Waller.
Yeah. The only one of the biggest problems with Justice League is how they deal with space. And I mean space as far as like being in space, like the Watchtower and stuff like that. When Superman broke through the Watchtower wall to go down to the binary fusion cannon, everything should have been sucked out into space.
Atmospheric shield.
Okay, I can... That's fine.
But on the other hand, there are times when those missiles are coming through and suddenly there's a vacuum.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, sorry, spoiler alert.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Oh, no, binary fusion cannon discharge. And technically, Superman did get hit. I mean, he didn't just miss the he got hit by the blast. Mm. And then, of course, at the end of this, my final note was, holy, huh?
It makes you wonder, if he wasn't there, would it have been worse?
That's true. That's very true. If he hadn't blocked part of the blast, would it have done even more damage than what it did? My final note was, holy crap, Galatea and the Ultiman.
I know, what a reveal.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just one set, but like a whole army of them.
Yep. Well, that's because all the other the original clones had kind of obviously died.
Right. Which it kind of explains why we didn't have Apache or whatever back in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's very, very, very cool. So what about you? What did you like or dislike about this one?
So I have to ask, does everyone know Superman's weaknesses?
I would assume so.
Like seriously, oh, he's weak to magic. Oh, he's weak against red sun radiation. Seriously, how the hell do these people know this? Like, did he put out a public email? Did Luther send out, like, a memo to everyone in the League of Evil?
Probably.
The Evil League of Evil. the Huntress line of locked. Sure, why not? That sounds like something I would say, like trying to escape. Oh, sure, the doors are all locked. Why not? I'm just going to sit here and try to hotwire it. I put down frickin' Luther, because, I mean, he couldn't just leave stuff well enough. Well enough alone. No, Luther's just gotta, you know, mess around with everything. Nothing like a reliable, megalomaniacal man to keep a series going.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we had the reveal of Galatea growing older again, it was like, oh, Power Girl! Oh, wait, yeah, Galatea. And then, way to go, Waller, you're just playing into his hand, you're supposed to be smarter than this. You are the big bad of the series, and yet you played into his hand. And I think that's all I've got for this episode.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, majority of these final four episodes, there isn't... I mean, there's story, obviously, there's stuff going on, but there isn't a lot of room for analysis. I mean, yeah, I kind of picked apart tried to pick apart the whole vacuum in space thing, but... I was debunked on that, but...
The thing I will say about these last four episodes is that there's a lot of character conclusion.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing a lot about Waller, we're seeing a lot about Galatea. We will see something about Wally and the Core 7, and if you're not watching it from the beginning, you're going to miss out on a lot of this stuff, and the references, and the story, the personal character story arcs.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned that to me on Facebook chat the other night, And I said, well, what moron wouldn't watch this show from the beginning? Because, as I've said before, this is easily the best superhero team-up show ever, as far as cartoons go.
I will agree that it's definitely up there, but if there's people that don't watch it. Like,
I well, they should.
Well, okay, let me put this into actual practicality here. I stayed at my friend's house for like a month. Her parents had never watched the show, and we were watching the reruns on Boomerang, and they were kind of out of order when they would catch it. So they didn't catch the whole story arc of like the familiar relationship between Wally and Shayera.
Right. Yeah.
And how they've got that brother-sister dynamic. Like, if they were to watch one of the later episodes and catch how they were acting, and they didn't catch the starts in the beginning, or if they missed the whole Huntress Q thing, or the Galatea...
Supergirl
dynamic.
I mean, I could see that, but again, I mean, majority of the people that are hopefully listening to this show, and normally I don't do this, but seriously, how many listeners do we actually have of this podcast? I know we've been sporadic in episodes, but damn it, we need more feedback.
Any feedback?
Yes, any feedback. But what I'm saying is, you know, us doing this podcast, we're catering to those who...
Oh, it's definitely a niche market that this is catering to.
Yeah, to those who have watched this cartoon. And have watched the other DC Animated Universe cartoons as well. So I guess we're going to move on.
Long-range communications back online, at least.
How long before you can restore full power?
Adam's still down in the reactor room working on it. He thinks he can shave 20 minutes off the system reboot.
Hello? Hello? Is this thing on?
It is now. Go ahead, Flash.
The evacuation's going okay. Lots of minor injuries, but no casualties.
They were fortunate.
That's not how they see it. They're pretty mad. They think it's our fault, John.
Do what you can to keep a lid on things. I'll send additional help.
I wouldn't. They're scared of us as it is. If we can help it, we should try not to look like an invading army, you know?
Agreed. Keep me updated.
Continuing coverage live from Covenant, New Mexico, where a huge explosion has caused tremors detected as far away as Japan. Although many agree that in the instance before the explosion, they saw an energy beam strike from the sky.
Turn it off.
Our sensors are still out. This is the only information available.
Diana, John, Shayera, meet me in the main conference room. Now. You too, John.
What have we done?
We haven't done anything. An outside force took control of the binary fusion generator. Whoever's behind that is responsible for the destruction of Cadmus, not us.
Tell that to all those people in New Mexico. They're terrified of us. So's the government.
We can't let that stop us from doing our job. We aren't here to be liked. We're here to make the world a safer place.
How are we doing so far today?
Come on, man!
I don't see the two goals as mutually exclusive. We should make a gesture of cooperation.
That's not a bad idea.
We could dismantle the binary fusion generator, at least until our innocence has been proven.
I've seen it on 100 worlds. Space-based weapons always destabilize planetary politics.
Okay, getting rid of that thing is a start, but it's not going to be enough. We have to regain their trust.
Then there's only one thing to do.
I need some light over here.
May I have your attention, please? I have an announcement to make. Until it's been proven that we aren't responsible for the tragedy in New Mexico, the founding members are turning ourselves into U.S. custody.
What?
Absolutely not. That's insane.
No, especially now.
We can't.
No, don't do it.
Cooperate fully with the investigation. Give them whatever they ask for.
But Clark, Superman.
Hold the fort, Kara. We're counting on you. All of you.
You want me to what?
Turn yourself over into U.S. custody, along with the rest of us.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Meet us at the coordinates I'm sending first. We should all go over together.
This is the single dumbest plan I've ever heard. If you're feeling guilty, clear your own name. Don't stand on the sidelines waiting for somebody else to do it.
We've already voted. 5 in favor.
6.
You have to come with us, Bruce.
I don't have to do anything. I'm a part-timer, remember?
Up next is Panic in the Sky. Professor Hamilton installs a transmitter on Galatea's forehead, putting her into telepathic contact with the Ultimen. He explains that without it, the Ultimen are just blank slates, tabula rasas, and Galatea is the one who will be controlling them. As she prepares to leave on her mission, she gives Hamilton a goodbye hug, calling him Daddy. With that comment, Hamilton's face falls. Aboard the Watchtower, the crew are still working flat out to restore main power as quickly as possible. The first thing they get back is communications, which allow them to speak to Flash, who reports that, from the surface, mercifully, there are no fatalities. Seeing a news report of the devastation, Superman calls a meeting of the Founders, sans Flash, and Batman. He says they've lost the trust of the people, and Wonder Woman proposes making a gesture of cooperation. The Founders announce to the rest of the League that they will temporarily be giving themselves up for arrest until their innocence is proved. Before leaving, Superman tells Kara to hold the fort. When called, Flash agrees to come too, but Batman refuses absolutely. Six of the seven Founders surrender themselves to the authorities. Aboard the Watch...
We'll talk
about that scene.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
And you'll understand why I'm laughing. Aboard the Watchtower, the systems detect a volley of incoming missiles which deploy driller heads instead of explosive payloads. The missiles strike, boring into the hull and disgorging the Ultimen. Galatea follows, issuing two simple orders. Keep her way clear of the station's reactor and then kill everyone in the Watchtower. And I believe it was sanitize the Watchtower, which makes me think of them with little scrubby brushes and
aprons. Yes, it was sanitize the Watchtower, and yes, they should have been having little toothbrushes to scrub people.
Inside Cadmus, Amanda Waller and General Eiling are watching the progress of the attack when Batman appears, knocking out Eiling, and confronts Waller. He tells her that, moral considerations outside, the League wouldn't have fired the cannon. They've been keeping tabs on Cadmus for months, as witness Superman's break into the rescue question, and would have known that the facility was empty when it was hit. The cannon was fired remotely, and that without the three people smart enough to pull it off, the only one not already in the Watchtower was Lex Luthor. Batman suggests that Waller start looking at him hard, then leaves. It is uncertain whether he notices the attack going on. A full-scale battle rages inside the Watchtower. Even the human support staff, though told to stay sheltered, join in the fighting. As a group of Ultimen reach the infirmary, Huntress in question join the fray, as does Captain Atom, who rises, still injured from his sickbed, having decided which side he's on. Steel notices a danger signal from the reactor room and flies down to join Atom. As the League takes the upper hand, Supergirl breaks off and flies down and sees Galatea wiping the floor with Steel. She's about to sabotage the reactor and blow the Watchtower up and tells Supergirl, "But I'm hoping that you'll be dumb enough to try to stop me." They fight, but Supergirl's outmatched. Galatea is stronger and more aggressive than she is. But as they fight, Supergirl goads her with the fact that she's not a real person, and Galatea becomes even more violent. Back at Cadmus, Waller starts looking at Luthor, and it is taking her an embarrassingly short time to discover that Batman is right. Luthor has been poaching the advanced technology from Cadmus and shipping it to his laboratory in LexCorp. Hamilton confirms that the technology could have been used to remotely fire the Watchtower's cannon, but that's the least of it. Waller calls Galatea and orders her to cease the attack. Galatea, who is about to kill Kara, ignores the order. Steel awakens in time to fire a blast that drives her back. Reaching the end of the restart process, the power is restored. As Galatea charges, Supergirl rips out a huge power coupling and rams it into her stomach, feeding her a massive surge of electricity. Up on the bridge, the League cheers as the last of the Ultimen are defeated, but the power goes off as soon as it came back on. Supergirl helps Steel to his feet while Galatea is left on the floor, twitching and catatonic. In his laboratory, Luthor has finished his great project, an android body bearing his likeness, after the design of Amazo, into which he will transfer his consciousness, thus making himself immortal and super powerful. Not only will his scheme succeed in making him a living god, but he has made the Justice League outlaws, so that killing Superman, as he has always dreamed, will now be an act of heroism. Before starting the transfer, he's confronted by Batman, who easily throws him out of the LexCorp window with his mysterious super strength. Just before Luthor throws the transfer switch, Waller appears with a nano disassembler beam and disintegrates the android, telling him he's under arrest. And to back her up, the six founders have been released from prison with Batman and are standing before them now. Superman tells Luthor that he's outnumbered and out of options, but Luthor still refuses to give in. Suddenly, Luthor begins to writhe and scream in pain, and mechanical tendrils erupt from the flesh of his back and arms. A familiar three-dot triangle appears in his chest, and a skeletal face emerges from his stomach, accompanied by a familiar voice. Brainiac.
Oh, man. I love Panic in the Sky and Divided We Fall. I love these two episodes, but Panic in the Sky, we'll start with that. I'm gonna have to get this audio to put in here.
Justice.
No. Yeah, but I'm gonna have to get the audio to put in here probably at the very beginning of the podcast, so people have already heard it. But this is the single dumbest plan ever. I don't have to do anything. I'm a part timer. Remember.
Oh, I love it.
Now, I broke those up, obviously, since there's, like, after he says this is the single dumbest plan ever, there's other audio. But, I mean, just putting those lines together, just pure win.
Yes. I love how this entire time he's still been a part-timer. Yep. And he kindly reminds them of that.
Yeah.
Yes, so what if I'm a family founding member? I'm only part-time.
Where's Batman? Running late. The Batmobile lost a wheel and the Joker got away. Hey! I added the hey part, but... What?
Okay, do you remember the rest of that?
The whole... Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
When Catwoman sold her litter, Alfred cleaned it up. There's another part, but...
Oh, no, I didn't know about that part. Okay, then. All right, then. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that later. The missiles. Now, they specifically state that they're Damocles missiles and they're from LexCorp and everything else. And I thought, honestly, like everybody else, that they were just going to make the Watchtower go boom. But no, they're Driller missiles. And you know what the first thing I thought of was?
Dig Dug?
What?
Dig Dug?
No.
What's up?
The weapon, the Driller missile weapon in Tomorrow Never Dies.
It's been a long time since I've seen that, so...
There's the villain in Tomorrow Never Dies, Elliot Carver, his people use a underwater drilling missile to get into the Devonshire to steal the nukes, and it drills right through the ship.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what these reminded me of. Three people on Earth know how to take control of the cannon, and two of them are aboard the Watchtower.
Who were the other two?
What I want to know is, who are the three people besides Luthor?
Luthor.
Okay, Luthor.
Steel.
Steel might be a stretch, but Jean most likely.
I wouldn't say Ray, because he's out of...
Yeah, he wasn't on the tower.
He wasn't he on the tower?
Because
yeah, he was, because Kara picked him up, and I was like,
oh that's right, yeah. So
I want to say Stars.
What?
Are not Stars? Stripes.
Stripe, maybe. I would say it's probably John Jones, obviously. I mean, Martian Manhunter, obviously.
Well, he would be the person that would know the most about that system since he built it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It sure as hell isn't Wally.
No. It'd probably be John, Adam, and then Luthor is the third person, so...
Batman?
Batman, maybe. Luthor has his own agenda. So much action. I mean, there was like after I wrote down the Luthor has so much agenda, has his own agenda line, I just started watching this episode. There was nothing I could write down that would really, do the episode justice because there's so much really good action. Then of course, girl fight.
Okay. again, this kind of harkens back to a conversation that we had off of recording. But if you kill your own twin, is that considered considered suicide? Well, or rather, your clone, not your twin, although it's interchangeable.
I really don't want to bring up that off-air conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a valid question. Is it?
We're getting close to it. The way that I see it is that
it's a single and different entity.
Yeah, Galatea, even though she is a direct clone of Supergirl, she has Supergirl's DNA. She's a different person. They're not the same person. I don't know. Oh man, I wish I'd recorded that conversation.
I'm glad you didn't. No, son, you can't listen to Daddy's podcast. There's a reason there's an explicit warning on that.
Exactly. Moving on. Yay! In response to the watchtower coming back on, and then somebody blows down there.
Yay! Oh, what the hell?
And then when I first saw this episode, and I knew because I had seen the previous episode where Question tried to kill Luther, but I knew that Luther had the super strength. And the first time I saw this, and he throws Batman out the window, I was like,
"What's going on?
What the?" And I was like, "Batman, no!" And then. I'm still wondering whose hand it was that grabbed him. Was it Wonder Woman's hand or was it Superman's hand? Because I could not tell.
Big manly hands. Because she's an Amazon.
Oh my god.
Because, ladies and gentlemen, Amazonians have big manly hands.
Yes.
Oh, the better to wield that broadsword.
Oh wow. did you actually think you could take me down? Yeah, but on the off chance, I might have been wrong.
Well, I love Waller.
Well, right, but on the off chance that I might have been wrong, and then it just pauses, and then Flash is like, ta-da. I gotta say, I really love CCH Pounder voicing Waller. She just puts so much into it.
Oh, there's so much emotion in this character.
Yep.
She brings it to life.
Yeah.
The one thing I love about Waller as a character, though, is she always has a backup.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw it in this one, but I remember, was it one of the recent Secret Six episodes, there's a point where Waller's, she's got a Manhunter robot, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to the point of, like, blowing up some of the zombies' heads just with explosive contacts, because she's everybody that she's got under her thumb, she's got everything on these people, even to one point where the main six characters have explosives in their heads if they know it or not, and she promptly reminds some of them. So she's definitely not someone to have on an enemy list, but as a character, it's always great to see her, you know, with backups and backups and backups.
Yeah.
So I would love to see her do a refight between her and Lex.
Oh, yeah.
Just now that she knows exactly where, you know, to what extent he's willing to go to and how tricky he is, I want to see them, you know, play chess against one another, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then my final note was, and this is something I didn't expect at all. Whoa, Brainiac.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, I noticed the triangle, you know, two nipples and the third nipple a little bit below it. And then I was like, oh my God. And then again,
it's a steal.
talk about having circuitry for your abdomen there. Holy crap, steel stomach. That easily was the most shocking moment of this season.
It's one hell of a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah. So what about you? What did you have for this one?
Oh, favorite lines. Boredom is my kryptonite. Well, kryptonite's my kryptonite, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
The father-daughter moment in the beginning, that was it. Like I said before, you know, we're seeing the end up of the character arcs.
Right.
It's supposed to be the end of the series. So we finally get a little bit of closure, and you can almost tell that Hamilton's having those thoughts of, oh God, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sending my daughter, effectively my daughter, out to potentially die. Oh God, what am I doing?
Yep.
Because it's a suicide mission. You know?
Yeah.
He knows this.
Oh, yeah.
So the moment where they're saying they're turning themselves in, for some reason in my mind, I was thinking, Justice League, the next generation. You know, Kara's being told to hold the fort. The original seven are going. I'm like, are we going to have like a whole like spin-off series? So the missile's coming in. I couldn't help but think of Missile Command. I'm sorry, but I love the fact that Batman took out Eiling, like, without even batting an eyelash.
Yeah.
Just like, bam, bam, bam. Okay, I'm done. I'm here to talk to Waller. It was a completely one-sided beatdown.
Oh, yeah, it was. Wasn't this the episode where Batman calls her on the president line? She's like, how did you get this number?
Yep.
I thought that was really, really great as well. What else?
I will say that one of the best scenes was Red Tornado versus three of the Wind Dragon.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Like, he's not even batting an eyelash, not that he has any, but he's just like, oh, okay, there's more. Whoosh! They're, like, putting all they can into it, and he's just like, oh, okay, I'll just amp it up to four. Click.
And since you brought up Red Tornado, we should mention that apparently they rebuilt him, because the last time we saw him, he got cut in half by Amazo.
And now he's back better than ever. Just, oh, okay.
Yep.
I'm not going to worry about you little chumps. I kind of expect him to go, Sue. Let's see, I've got Go Waller. And so I didn't bat an eyelash when Luther caught the exploding batarang. I don't know why. I just was like, oh, he caught it and exploded. Huh. Big reveal, and I'm just left going, well, that kind of explains it, yeah. Shit.
But it's one of those things where we've noticed over the last few episodes that he knows he has, like, when he starts hitting the question, he's like, oh, where did this come from? Oh, wait, screw it. I don't care where this came from. I have super strength. And he just starts beating down the question.
I never caught that.
And then
I thought it was a side effect of the radiation.
No, yeah, no. And then here, when Batman throws the batarang and Lex just reaches up and it explodes in his hand and nothing happens, I love Batman's reaction because, Lex Luthor, when he's not possessed by Brainiac, he's a regular human being, just like Batman. So an exploding batarang technically should have taken his hand off. I mean, you know, granted it's no lightsaber, but, I mean, still, it should have taken his whole hand off.
I agree. It's kind of like, huh, all right. This is interesting.
Yes. And like you said, the cliffhanger of Brainiac, I was, oh my God.
Your head just kind of exploded.
Yeah,
kind
of. Overall, this episode is just it's easily my favorite out of, and I know it's kind of like setting up Divided We Fall and setting up the end of this season and all that, but I really liked all of the action in this because it was just nonstop action.
I will say this was a very, very good episode, but not my favorite for this season.
Well, it's one of my favorites. It's not like my overall favorite, I think, is the next episode, which is Divided We Fall. But
see, I'm kind of split between that. I'm between the next episode we're going to cover and the last.
Yeah, but there's...
But I guess because I like Waller so much.
Yeah,
but...
I don't want to jump too far ahead into the last episode because there's reasons why we're covering it the way we are, and I'll explain that a little bit later. But yeah, overall, Panic in the Sky, one of the best episodes of this season. So with that, we are going to move on.
We are one, and we comprehend. We can build a machine that will allow us to absorb the information of the entire Earth in a single stroke. And then, the galaxy, the entire universe, will remake the universe.
Watchtower, send rapid response teams to the transmitted coordinates. We need backup.
That's going to be a problem, Jean. The Ultimen wrecked every javelin in the landing bay, and the teleporters...
are still down. They hardly seem worth the trouble sometimes. All Justice Leaguers, report to the transmitted coordinates immediately. This is an Omega-level alarm. All available members and associates respond immediately.
We're scrambling now, but at top speed, we're over an hour away.
I doubt any of the others can get here any faster.
Then the seven of us will have to be enough.
Next up, we have Divided We Fall. Inside LexCorp, the seven founding members of the Justice League and Amanda Waller have just been treated to a bizarre sight of Brainiac emerging from inside Lex Luthor's body. But no one is more surprised than Luthor himself. Brainiac explains that he inserted a microscopic copy of himself into Luthor's body when he forced Luthor to build him a new body inside LexCorp years earlier. Since then, he has grown steadily until Luthor was, for all intents and purposes, acting under his control. As a byproduct of his occupancy, Brainiac cured Luthor's kryptonite poison and cancer, and gave him his mysterious super strength. The last act Luthor was to accomplish was to transfer Brainiac's consciousness into the more suitable android body. Having had enough exposition, the League attacks, but when Luthor Brainiac Hybrid was able to convert the building to mechanical constructs, with which he overpowers the League, but Jean breaks free of their restraints and smashes Brainiac's body. In his final move, Brainiac converts the entire top of the LexCorp Tower into an enormous skull-like robot and attacks again, but the combined power of the League manages to destroy it. However, the fight was only a diversion. Under Brainiac's control, Luthor is walking along a sewer to find a place where he can stop and repair himself. Brainiac makes clear that he regards Luthor as only a temporary vessel, which Brainiac will digitize and then destroy per his programming. Luthor points out that Brainiac's programming is devoid of purpose. Its ultimate end is simply for him to digitize and then destroy the entire universe. After that, nothing, Luthor says he can show Brainiac a higher purpose. In a conference with Waller, the League deduces that since Brainiac's body is entirely nanotechnological now, he will go to Cadmus to harness the power of the Darkheart. They call for backup, but the League teams on the ground are too far away, and the Watchtower cannot send help. The javelins were all wrecked in the attack, and the teleporters are still down. Sometimes I wonder why we even bother. Sure enough, as soon as they arrive, Brainiac has done just that, absorbing the nanotechnology. A new entity is created, a true fusion of Luthor and Brainiac, which has created created a machine that will enable him to instantly absorb and then destroy all the knowledge stored on Earth, and then the universe. Only they will now be able to remake the universe to their liking. To fight the League, Brainiac conjures up android replicas of the Justice Lords, each of which confronts its opposite and goads him or her with his or her worst fears. Superman, the fear, the others that his power inspires, Lantern, his heartbreak over Shayera, her status as an outcast on both Thanagar and Earth, Flash is in his immaturity compared with the rest of the League. Now, I want to bring this up really quick before I continue, because this is the only time we see a Justice Lord's costume flash.
Is it?
Yep. He was dead in a better Earth, or better world. That's right. That's one of the reasons why they went rogue, because Flash died. But this is the first time that we see a Justice Lord version of Flash. They are all resistant to the goading and defeat their counterparts and manage to destroy the machine. But Brainiac is still too powerful for them. All of them are knocked unconscious except for Flash. Luthor Brainiac prepares to kill Flash, but Flash vibrates free of his restraints and is left standing alone against Luthor Brainiac. Luthor Brainiac taunts, "Are you going to fight me, boy?" Flash hesitates and then streaks away. Luthor Brainiac begins reassembling his machine, and then Flash hurtles at him from the opposite direction, having run so fast that he has circled the globe in only a few seconds, and hitting Luthor with enough force to tear away a chunk of his android armor. Excuse me. Flash makes his fastest run ever, circling the world faster and faster each time, hitting Luthor harder and harder each time. Then he stops, his body crackling with the speed energy he's tapped into, and applies his vibrating hands to Luthor's armor, tearing it completely away and leaving him half naked and helpless at the bottom of a crater. As the League rises from unconsciousness, Flash stands unsteady and then fades completely away to the other's horror. Luthor manages a weak chuckle. "What do you know? I did kill him."
Wrong thing to say.
Now is the moment of truth for Superman. He seizes Luthor and his eyes glow red and then fade away. At the end of the day, he is not a Justice Lord, no matter how much he wished he could do what that one did. Then Jean shouts that Flash is still alive. He can sense him telepathically. Shiara reaches in the direction Jean is pointing, and her hand touches a portal to some other dimension, the Speed Force, into which Flash has been pulled. She seizes his hand, and all six of them form a chain. It then takes all their combined strength to pull Flash back. A short distance away, Waller tells the President to call off the airstrike against Brainiac. The next day, Superman addresses the crowd in Metropolis, including the members of the Expanded League, the Watchtower support crew, the press, the various citizens. He says that the League has been guilty of arrogance and has alienated the people it is trying to protect. That being the case, the founders have decided to disband the League and decommission the Watchtower. This is the end. And then, of course, Green Arrow is the one that gives the impassioned speech. In the silence that follows, the founders begin to dismount the stage, but Green Arrow steps forward. Says who? "You remember what we did yesterday? We saved the world. Again. You don't think that has any value? Well, think again, pal. The Justice League goes on with or without you. Look, nobody can question your service or commitment to making things better. If you're quitting because you think you've already done your fair share, fine, we'll throw you a parade. But if you're quitting because it's easier than continuing the fight, then you're not all the heroes we thought you were. The world needs the Justice League, and the Justice League needs you, Superman." Yeah, I thought I did pretty good mimicking all the way there. This speech is greeted with applause from the crowd. It is a turning point for Superman. After so many years, he feels he has finally regained the trust he lost when they attacked the Earth under Darkseid's control. Bowing to the crowd's pressure, he agrees that the League will stay in service, but they have to make changes to ensure they remain in touch with the people. As Superman goes on, Batman excuses himself and throws a verbal wink to Arrow, who has justified Batman's reasons for recruiting him. That evening, the Daily Planet, Clark Kent drops in on Lois, and she is finishing her story on the League. He is surprised to hear that she is using the adjective ambivalent, and she shoots back that her job is to be as tough on Superman as she is on any subject, but only because he himself has set such high standards. After all, she finishes, he's only human. Well, you know what I mean. And Clark smiles. Let me just look at my notes here really quick. I don't have a whole lot, so I'm just going to like breeze through these, and we can kind of go back and forth. I linked you to the DCAU wiki page for the Superman the Animated Series Ghost in the Machine, and that's where that's actually where the continuity of the DCAU for all these episodes, that's actually where it started, if you look at it, because Brainiac had lain dormant in Luthor since Ghost in the Machine episode from Superman the Animated Series.
I totally missed that episode because I didn't watch it. So when I saw did I miss something?
I was looking for it on YouTube, and I cannot find that episode on YouTube, but I'm sure people would be able to find it somewhere online. I'll be dipped. Be gone.
Yeah, that was. I love that line. That was one of the few things I wrote down for this, and it was like, I'll be dipped. Oh my god. Did that just come out of Waller?
Lex, triple nibble.
Okay, I didn't get that.
Triple nibble because no, Brainiac.
But it was like, I didn't go there.
Hey, it's the fact that I've seen Mallrats. Hello.
That's I mean, that came. That was the first thing that popped in my mind.
Hey, Superman and Green Lantern, no crossing the streams, damn it! When they destroy the Brainiac skull thing. Yep. The animation in this episode, the animation on in this series on a whole has been amazing, but this animation in this episode was just so. This was like mind blowing awesomeness.
They definitely put everything that they could into this.
Yes, they so did. And then again, Batman with his lines. Then the seven of us will have to be enough. You're right. I am in here, and I like it. Less talking, more hitting.
I love that. That was that. That is Shayera.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I was actually shocked to see the Justice Lords reborn because I thought it was actually them. I didn't really see it first. Like, when I first saw this episode, before I had seen it multiple times, when I first saw it, like, on Cartoon Network, I didn't really see that it was Brainiac Luthor making clone people as far as – because they were originally just – regular blank slate androids, and he's like, oh no, we can do better, and then it shows up as the Justice Lords, and I was just so shocked at that. Flash running away, no, he's building up to the Speed Force. May the Force be with you. And I kind of already mentioned it in the synopsis, but what do you know, I did kill him.
Yep, that was like the worst thing he could say. Like, he did not. Oh, he is so dumb.
And my final line is something that Flash said, and we will actually call back to this when we get to the great brain robbery in season 5. I can never go that fast again.
Oh, but doesn't he?
So what about you, sir? What do you got for Divided We Fall?
Brainiac, the cure for cancer. Why am I working so damn hard in school then? While I'm not taking any prisoners. Well, I'll be dipped. Except for the language barrier. Okay, so we get to see the league in full form, not holding any punches, trashing the crap out of giant floating heads. Why don't they use them in Beast Machines? That's all I'm saying.
Hey.
He's going to go to where he can get the most technology as quick as possible. He's going to Radio Shack, because that's where all technology goes to die. Latent aggression there, John, beating the crap out of the evil version of Shayera. Well, she broke my heart.
Same.
What else? Let's see, the fact that we love the Flash. This was definitely Flash-centric, if you think about it.
Yeah, someone it was.
That's, you know, we see the point where in the last episode, he took the initiative to go and find a way to get everybody down there to help those people. He didn't wait for John. Or Jean, rather.
Yeah.
And that shows a lot of his character growth, especially now when he's the last one that takes out Luthor.
Yeah.
When he's willing to do that one sacrifice that every superhero is for, it just shows this huge character growth when we go from the old Wally that was, you know, Mr. Goofball to the guy that's trying to pay for all the food he has to eat through really bad endorsements.
Yes. I mean, Wally's overall character development in this cartoon is amazing, even though, like, I think it was this season where, you know, the first five or six or seven episodes, they're Wally either didn't appear or he didn't even have a speaking line. I mean, there was that one episode, The Return, when Amazo came back, where the only thing was Wally was part of the ground team. The only thing you heard from him was some sort of groan to let you know that he was still alive. I mean, it took until these last couple episodes that we've talked about for them to really use Wally. And I think one of the reasons why they did that, and this is just me reading into what they did, obviously, I'm not an inside source to Bruce Timm or anything like that. I kind of wish I was. But I think that they didn't use Wally in the very beginning of this season to kind of make you miss him. And then all of a sudden, these last two episodes are pretty much Wally-centric as far as character development.
I think we definitely saw the end of his character growth. Mind you, I haven't seen the next season that much, so. But well, if this was the end, if they weren't going to get another season,
yeah,
this is, you know, bravo, bravo.
Oh, yeah, so much, yes. So much bravo. So what else you got?
Best Flash moment ever. Oh, where's Wonder Woman? She's in her invisible jet. Hee hee hee. You can't see her.
I love the way that Brainiac says that. Now, where is Wonder Woman?
She's in the invisible jet, dude. You won't see her.
Yes, I thought that was so funny.
You've got my number.
Yeah.
And then, oh, the Latin part at the end between Batman and Green Arrow. That was such a Watchmen tossback. Quantum Custodium. Sorry, my Latin sucks. But who watches the Watchmen?
Yeah.
They just kind of tweaked it a little bit. But still, who watches the Watchmen?
Yeah. Well, of course, they would have to tweak it to fit into this continuity, but it still translates to the same thing. Yep. So that's very, very, very cool.
That's what I've got.
Yes. And, I'll be bringing this up in the next review, but, I mean, technically, you know, this season of Justice League, this was going to be it. I mean, this was... So, I mean, they went out with a bang. So, yeah, we're going to move on.
I've been wondering when you were going to show up. Terry McGinnis. Or do you prefer being called Batman?
Finally up today is Epilogue. 65 years from now, Terry McGinnis, now in his early 30s, breaks into the high-security home of Amanda Waller. Now a very old woman, he confronts her and demands answers. She seems unsurprised to see him and insists on telling the story of her own at her own pace. Months earlier, Bruce, now in his 80s, was suffering a kidney failure and needed a tissue donation to clone new organs. Terry was tested and found to be a perfect compatible match. Surprised, Terry had his DNA checked and was found to be Bruce's genetic son. Terry is at first angry, believing that Bruce masterminded the whole thing in order to ensure that he had a successor. In his mind, Terry imagines himself storming the Bat Cave, and confronting Bruce, who doesn't deny the accusation and insists that the world will always need Batman. Terry also imagines himself withdrawing from the Justice League, saying Batman is dead, and breaking up with Dana, whom he has continued dating since high school and now knows his secret identity. In the present, Waller tells Terry the truth. She was the mastermind, not Bruce. After the Luthor-Brainiac crisis, Waller went from being the League's chief antagonist to being their ally. Her role as the government liaison to the League, she came to know Batman very well. Gaining a great deal of respect for him, she also met a lot of interesting people, but none of them were comparable to Batman as he saved the day using his wits, body, and will. To make her point, Waller tells Terry a story of crisis that occurred before he was born. Ace, the last member of the Royal Flush Gang, began causing havoc when her powers developed beyond causing hallucinations to being able to alter the fabric of reality itself. Waller warned the League that Ace was on the verge of dying, but of a brain aneurysm and a resulting psychic backlash would cause the massive destruction and loss of life. At some point, Cadmus retrieved a special weapon to kill her and prevent the disaster, which Batman volunteered to use. However, when he reached her, he wouldn't use the weapon. Instead, he asked Ace to reverse the changes she had made and comforted her over her lost childhood. With him by her side, she died peacefully and the world returned to normal. That incident demonstrated to Waller that Batman's greatest attributes were his compassion and his iron refusal to ever take a life. But as time went on, Waller saw him age and realized he wouldn't be around forever or might eventually be killed. However, in her mind, the world needed a Batman. Waller used her old Project Cadmus contacts to launch Project Batman Beyond. Bruce's DNA was obtained years previously during one of his exploits. She found a young couple, Warren and Mary McGinnis, that were almost identical psychiatric match for Dr. Thomas and Martha Wayne. When Warren went in for what he thought was a flu shot, his reproductive DNA was overwritten by that of Bruce Wayne's by nanobots. A year later, Terry McGinnis was born, genetically the son of Mrs. Mary McGinnis and Bruce Wayne. Genetics, however, do not alone make a Batman, so Waller hired an assassin to kill Terry's parents when he was 8 years old, as the three of them were leaving the movie theater showing The Grey Ghost Strikes Again, hoping to see the same tragedy would cause the same response. However, the Phantasm couldn't bring herself to kill them, as Batman could never or would never resort to more murder that would destroy everything he stood for. Waller was forced to agree, and the project was effectively scrapped. With the McGinnises spared, Matt McGinnis would be born. However, 9 years later, due to cruel twist of fate, Terry's father was killed anyway, which set a chain of events that turned Terry into Batman. Convinced that Bruce wouldn't tell him the whole story, Terry confronts Waller. Waller implies that she believed it was a form of divine intervention which led to the death of his father. Why Terry became Batman was a mystery, but she still says he is free to choose his own path. He is Bruce's son, not his clone. Her assessment, Terry may not be as smart as the old Batman, but he is every bit devoted to helping others. In parting, she gives him some last advice. If you want to have a little better life than the old man's, take care of the people who love you. Or don't. It's your choice. Taking this advice to heart, Terry returns to Wayne Manor, prepares to propose to Dana, shares a moment of mostly unspoken reconciliation with Bruce, and takes off to speak with Superman on a case. The skies of Gotham, something winged flies past a police hovercraft, causing one of the pilots to ask, "Did you see that?"
This is them tying everything up. Now, in that synopsis, I had mentioned a lot about Batman Beyond. Now, if people haven't seen Batman Beyond before Justice League, the way the DC Animated Universe timeline goes, Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, Justice League, and then Batman Beyond. However, Batman Beyond was a series that ran from 99 to 2001. So technically that aired first, and then Justice League started in 2001. So technically Batman Beyond is the future, but it is the evolving story. It's mainly the story of Terry McGinnis, but they wanted to tie into the old Batman show as well. So that's where that... most of my notes are like from when I very first watched this, because I'll watch these episodes every now and then, but it's one of those things where every time I watch this, I still get shocked. And my first note was, "Whoa, Waller's house and Terry. What's Terry doing there?" One of my main complaints about this specific episode, I'm not too thrilled that they used the JLU intro. I think it would have been better if they used a mashup between Batman Beyond and Justice League Unlimited, kind of like what they did with the new Batman Superman Adventures. I don't know if you ever saw some of those episodes, Lupus, but the new Batman Superman Adventures basically combined the theme songs of Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series into one theme.
And I wish that they would have done that here some way. I understand they wanted to pretty much do whatever they wanted in case this was the end of the series of Justice League, but I don't like the fact that they just used the Justice League Unlimited theme. Even though I love that theme, I just wish that they would have done something a little bit differently. Questions for Waller. I'm the goddamn Batman Beyond. I don't want any damn tea. Terry and Dana dating for 15 years. When did Terry tell Dana about the secret? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question. That was kind of like, oh, you don't want to deal with the Batman's people coming after me, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wait, how the hell does she know? Bruce must have been pissed.
Well, and again, if you haven't seen, I mean, Batman Beyond doesn't really go into it as far as them. I mean, yes, Batman Beyond shows them as you know, obviously Terry in this episode is 30. Back then he was 15, 16. So in Batman Beyond he is 15, 16. So while it does show them dating in high school, we never actually see anything further until this episode. So, yeah, I would have liked to know when exactly Terry told Dana about the secret. I love the Batman is deadline. For some strange reason, I love when Terry says that because I thought it was amazing. Being Batman's no honor, it's a curse.
Wah. Sorry.
Cleaning up Cadmus's messes, more Royal Flush Gang. Ugh, they used the Royal Flush Gang like a revolving door. Bruce is Terry's father. Why did I write down Ace Boom? The hell was that? Spoon? No, not Ace Spoon. Ace Boom. I thought that was in reference to the dog. No, it's in reference to Ace, her actual...
What would happen to her if...
Yeah, if the backlash had happened, that's what that's... Okay, yeah. Follow the yellow brick road, Batman. It's weird seeing Batman sitting on a swing set.
Yeah.
Waller was the government liaison to Justice League. That's very interesting.
That was very appropriate, though, wasn't it?
I think it would have been more appropriate if they had gone with that in the next 13 episodes instead of using Rick Flag. Not Rick Flag. Who the hell did they use?
Agent Flag?
No, it was Faraday. Agent Faraday. Bruce's DNA was easily enough to obtain. He left it all over town. Not remotely what I meant.
That was awesome. Oh, you mean now I've got brothers and sisters too?
Andrea Beaumont, aka Phantasm, was the assassin. Again, Bruce, Tim, and company are pretty much
wrapping everything up.
They're connecting everything because they didn't know what that they were going to get another 13 episodes. You aren't Bruce's clone, you're his son. Terry is going to propose to Dana. Kent called. Just nothing apocalyptic. Just wants your opinion on a case he's working. So I love that even though the Justice League flashback, the only two members that... I mean, like I know of Dr. Light... Just because I've seen action figures of her, and I saw her earlier in the cartoon, she like made a background appearance. But the only two like real League members in that flashback are obviously Batman and Shiera. I would have still liked to have seen some of the other League members that are more recognizable.
Well, I guess it would also depend on if you're a comic geek or not, because she does play some prominent League positions later on in the comics.
Yeah.
Especially after the main seven kind of disappear out of it for a while.
Yeah, but again,
she's kind of like the beta wave of characters.
Yeah, but again, sticking with the cartoon continuity and not the comics. did you see that? It was the line that one of the police helicopter pilots said.
Wasn't that from the very first episode of Batman, though?
Yep. This potentially was the end of JLU. This is why Epilogue is here, and they were harking back to the beginning of BTAS at the end of this episode with Batman flying through the sky. I wish that, and I know they didn't know this at the time that they were producing Batman Beyond, but I don't feel that Epilogue fits with JLU. I just don't feel like it does. I feel like, I mean, you know, if you were really going to do it after Destroyer in season 5. Because Destroyer shows us, and of course we'll get to that, but at the end of Destroyer, it shows all the heroes running down the stairs and that they're going to continue the fight. So I think Epilogue would have been better placed there. However, I know at the time they didn't think that they were going to get picked up and everything else, so they put it here. But all in all, I really love this episode. What about you?
I liked that we got to see the end of Waller's story arc. Like, we see what happens to her at the end, what goes on with this character, and why she changes from this uber badass bitch to this old frail woman that is sassy and cocky and gives, you know, the new Batman lots of shit. But, like, seriously, I had 4 notes for this, and we've kind of run through them.
Sorry?
No. There is one thing that really did kind of throw me, though. When she's going over the whole experience of going after the Royal Flush Gang and why he is so compassionate and everything else, she doesn't say that his power is compassionate, but the fact that he is the one that would do anything to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she gives him that remote, and why she knows he will take care of the issue with Ace, because he is the one that isn't afraid to break rules, except for those few moral ones that he has. And
the only rule that Batman has ever had, at least to my knowledge, is that he does not kill. Anything else?
Au contraire. But
he, go ahead.
Okay, so. Again, you're going to hate me because I'm bringing up the comics, but there's two rules that he always had. One was no guns, and two, he wouldn't kill. And he broke both of those when he tried to kill Darkseid. He had a gun, he shot, he fired, and that bring the whole fiasco of Batman being dead. Anyway.
Wait. What are you talking about? He had a gun and shot Darkseid. What?
Shot Darkseid.
This is comics?
Final Crisis. Yep.
Okay, well, again, I'm not mad at it. It's fine if you want to bring that up. But
anyway, what I'm saying is, like, when I wrote this down, I did not expect him to be Mr. Compassionate or to follow those rules. I thought it was one of those, he does what has to be done.
Yeah.
That's what set him aside from the rest of the original 6. So I wrote down Batman, child killer. But I seriously did not see coming that he would be the compassionate one to sit there and hold her during her time of death.
Yeah.
And it was very, very touching. But at the same time, that's what makes him such a kindred spirit to Waller.
Yeah.
That they would both do whatever it takes to, you know, save the day, regardless of what it is, what their moral standing is, as long as it's for the same purpose.
Right, yeah.
But I think this is definitely one of the best episodes that I've seen.
Yeah.
Especially in this last season.
Oh yeah. Exactly. But, what else you got? Is that it?
Yeah, rapid weight loss for Waller, apparently, like, you know, they came up with a diet pill. Nobody told me. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Just yay Terry, and then yay for the Phantasm. We get to see her in the complete roundup of all these obscure things from all the DCU.
Yep. Yeah, it was, like I said, it was pretty much them, you know, going for it, tying everything together, and it was just amazing. Again, I kind of wish that the Justice League scene would have had, I mean, even if it just had Flash there, some, you know, someone else that I knew. I mean, yeah, the League scene was kind of short because mainly it was a Batman scene after, you know, he says to Shagger that you know, he's the only one of them that Ace knows. But I wish that there was more Leaguers that I actually knew doing the fighting originally. But other than that, yeah, I love this episode. So I think we're going to go to some audio, and then we'll come back with the outro.
I don't know. My dad wasn't a superhero. He didn't save the world from the near apocalypse of 09. He never went toe-to-toe with Mr. Freeze, but he was a good man just the same. Even after he and Mom got divorced, he always tried to do the right thing. My brother and I were always provided for. When Mom couldn't quite make the bills, he always helped out. Tried to teach me right from wrong. Would have, too, if I'd ever listened to him. And he never laid a hand on me, although Lord knows I was asking for it.
What's your point?
My point is I never once doubted that he loved me with all his heart. My point is all those warm feelings I had for my dad, turns out they were just another lie. Another in the long list of things you've stolen from me. My point is I just found out that Warren McGinnis isn't my father. You are.
What do you want from me?
I want to know the whole truth.
Sounds like you already do.
Guess I didn't want to believe you were so incredibly arrogant that you thought the world couldn't go on without you.
It's not arrogance. It's fact.
You set the whole thing up.
How? You were already a teenager when I first met your mother.
I don't know. Maybe you dug up some of that old Cadmus nanotech. Used it to have my genes rewritten to match yours.
That technology's been illegal for over 40 years.
Didn't stop the Joker from using it on Tim Drake. All right, low blow. Because you'd never lie to me, right?
Fine. But you know as well as I do, accident or not, it's a good thing that you're almost a clone of me. The world does need a Batman, and it always will.
Well, that's it for episode 19. Overall, a very well done, a very well thought out ending to what could have been the end of Justice League. As I've said throughout this entire episode, they did not know that they were going to get picked up again for another 13 episodes. But if it had ended the way that it, if they had ended it the way that, you know, and it didn't have that additional season, I would have been completely fine with the way that they had ended this. It was just amazing.
It was great.
Yes. So great. But then they went and did 13 more. So thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins podcast. There's several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is TF2 and Mike. Do you even use Twitter anymore?
I can. I ghost. I look and I watch.
Stalker.
Damn right. My Twitter account is Caminiti Style, and for those that don't know Italian, it's CaminitiStyle. MOUSE.
Become a fan of us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/geekcastradionetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821.
And even if it's not for our show, just say it is so we get some fan mail.
Exactly. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins podcast. I wish you'll join us next time when we will be recapping Justice League Unlimited Season 4. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
Lupus Convoy.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.